Anna DeVlantis joins us for This Week in Chicago History. Good morning, Anna. Let's start with the Kansas Comet, Gale Sayers.
Yes, you know, this one is fascinating, Bob, because you think about 1965, Gale Sayers, then a rookie running back for the Bears, just performed this remarkable feat. It was a game at Wrigley, which is where the Bears played then, and Gale Sayers tied an NFL record by scoring six touchdowns in one game, including an 85-yard punt return. And to hear him describe it, Bob, is just... it's just wonderful because, first, a little background. It was an ugly, messy day at Wrigley, rainy and muddy, and players were slipping all over the place, dropping balls, just messy play, but not Gale Sayers.
It seemed like everybody was slipping but me. I had the same thing, cleats that they had on, but I just had a great day, and I couldn't believe that I was having that kind of a day. I wasn't concerned about records because we didn't have record books on the sideline like they do today. You know, if we would have had record books on the sideline, I probably could have scored 8 touchdowns. But it was a great day for the Bears. We won the ball game 61-20, and I scored 6 touchdowns. And when I saw one person, one tackler, he's dead. I knew that. I'm looking behind him. You know, and that's the way I approach the game. You know, hey, I had that God-given talent. And I used...
Wow, great to hear him. December 12th, 1965. He only played 68 games in his career. Isn't that unbelievable?
It is. It is. And what a mark he made in that time. You know, after that game, Bob, George Halas was quoted as saying, "It was the greatest performance ever by one man on a football field." He said he'd never seen anything like it. It's just pretty special.
No doubt. It'll never be forgotten. And it's funny that you can remember defeat as well, because back in 85, I remember... The Monday night game in Miami, don't you?
Totally. I totally remember it. Such a magical year for Bears fans. But this week, this was the game that the Bears lost. The soon Super Bowl-bound Bears were so dominant, as you remember. And they just, everyone thought this was going to be a perfect season. No one could beat them. And that hope was deflated by Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins. As you point out, Monday night spotlight at Miami. There was no McMahon. Steve Fuller was in the quarterback position. And the players would later just kind of write this one off as like kind of a fluky day. Nothing was falling in their favor. Dan Hampton at one point tipped a Marino pass, batted it over 20 yards, and it landed right in the hands of a receiver for Miami and just carried it in for a touchdown. That's kind of how the day just played out. Nothing went their way, but the season did. We got that one for
us. But you guys know what happened the next day.
Yes! Isn't that weird? The Super Bowl shuffle was recorded. Hey, Dave, what do you think about that? Because just, isn't that bad karma? Weren't they all thinking that at the time to do that?
I think today it would be regarded that way. I think there were certain members of that team, if you asked them, they were not in favor, and some didn't take part in it. Mm-hmm. And one of them is on this radio station.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Hamp. Mm-hmm. Do we have to play a little of it? I guess we're required by law.
I think we have to.
All right, that's enough. Let's go way back for a little broadcasting history now, Anna.
Yeah, so back in 1921, Bob, over 100 years ago, the very first radio transmission was broadcast out of Chicago on Westinghouse Electric's radio station, KYW. As they were testing the transmission capabilities, radio was all new, and the person designated to speak first was a woman by the name of Mary Garden. She was this prominent opera singer, very celebrated all over the world. It played at opera houses, it sang and performed, and she was then the director of the Chicago Grand Opera Company. The first words were supposed to be, this was the plan, "This is station KYW, Chicago." That was the plan, but the first words that went out over the air were, "My God, it's dark in here." She just walked into the auditorium theater, and that's what she said. You know how the rule for broadcasting, Bob, we all learned this as rookies, like, the mic is always hot. It's always hot. Well, we didn't know that yet, because she didn't know that yet.
Yeah,
so we forgive her.
The rule hadn't been established yet.
Not yet. Not quite yet. But it was pretty incredible just to think. There was a performance of Madame Butterfly that was broadcast that day, and some 50,000 people in the Chicagoland area tuned in to that very first radio broadcast in Chicago.
And isn't KYW still around, licensed to Philadelphia?
Moved to Philadelphia, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it is still radio and television, I believe.
And Mary's voice, as you mentioned, was the first, but I know who the second voice was. It was John Records Landecker. Check it out. Yeah, look it up. '851, the piano, definitely part of Chicago history, isn't it, Anna?
This year, the year was 1904, Bob, and Chicago was the piano-making capital of America. More pianos produced here than any other city in America. If you bought one, there was a 1-in-3 chance, more than a 1-in-3 chance, that it was from Chicago. There's this old photo I found at the Chicago History Museum, and at the corner of Van Buren and Wabash there, right under the L, around turn of the century, there were four piano companies based right there. Big buildings, huge presence, right there on one corner. But they were spread out all across the city. You had some big names starting to emerge in the industry, like Steinway, Wurlitzer, and Baldwin. But Chicago was producing pianos more affordably and making them more accessible to middle-class families. It suddenly seemed like everyone wanted a piano in their house. And Chicago was delivering. Cable Piano was one of them. Conover, Schiller. Big presences had employed a lot of people in the city. At the corner of Chicago and Clark, to this day, you can see the landmarked building there, the Gertz Piano Company there. Listen to this, produced 50,000 pianos in 25 years. And you think about that, that's before assembly lines or machine automation and technology produced that many pianos. Just pretty incredible, Bob. Think about that.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, I don't remember if it was Steinway, but I still remember one piano store being around in the Loop back in the 70s or something like that. Let's go back to 1925, and it was the beginning of a very nice-smelling neighborhood, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Maurice Linnell cookies. You remember those, Bob?
Sure.
Oh, gosh. There wasn't a holiday that went by without us having Maurice Linnell cookies. I remember the pinwheels. Remember the little swirly ones with the pink sugar on the outside? And then the jelly stars. Super popular all across the Chicago area for generations, really. Well, Maurice Linnell started it on the Northwest Side, 1925. Three Swedish immigrants, in fact, started it. One of them was Linnell, and his son was Maurice, and he thought that was the most Americanized name in the family. So he said, let's do Maurice. People will embrace that. No one can pronounce any of these other names. So they took their recipes and just from Sweden and made them here and total hit. Became a Chicago tradition. And remember at the holidays, they had the tins they'd sell of the Maurice Linnell cookies and stuff like that. But here's what did them in, Bob. Trans fats. The FDA
That's why they tasted so good, because they
exactly.
had trans fats.
The trans fats was the secret sauce, many would argue. But the FDA didn't think so, and they were trying to like pressure a lot of companies to say, you know what, we got to work to eliminate these. There was some public pressure, too, and you had to label it now as such. And the Linnell family said they struggled with it because they tried and tried to reproduce these recipes without the trans fats, but didn't work out so well, and also had some equipment that was just getting old. And they couldn't reinvest, and so they closed it only 8 years ago, though. Shut down that big factory in Norwich that many people will remember.
Mm-hmm. Started in 1925. And finally, we were talking about this today, the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge is going away. How sad.
I know. I love the Pickwick. It's just one of those iconic movie theaters that I just, you know, you wanted it to be there forever. I heard Steve talking about it in the news, too, today. It's a century-old story. The Pickwick Theater closing after 94 years. Started out showing vaudeville shows, then moved into movies. It's actually on the National Registry of Historic Places, so I don't know what they're going to do with that building. You know, the Art Deco style, that Grand Marquis, it's just... It's just such a beautiful building. It was actually featured in the opening credits to Siskel and Ebert's At the Movies. But Dino Vlahakis, I don't know if you saw, he was quoted in the Tribune and some other media outlets just saying, you know, over the decades, it just became less and less profitable. Fewer movies are being shown, fewer reasons to go out to the theater. And they're actually losing money right now since the pandemic began. So he said they're hoping for A Knight in Shining Armor to come in and just take over the business. But short of that, January 8th is going to be the last day for the Pickwick. They'll be showing Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, how appropriate. Yeah, right. 1928 it opened up, and they have that main theater and that great Art Deco building, and then four small screens. So it's a pretty big piece of property, and as you say, the owners just kind of got tired, and the business is too rough. And there is the possibility, though, that it'll stay alive if as they said, A Knight in Shining Armor shows up.
Gee, I hope so. I hope so. If you're out there, Knight in Shining Armor, step in, because we need the Pickwick. But it's just, you know, such a part of history. My gosh.
It is. This week in Chicago history, Anna DeVlantis. More next Wednesday. Thanks, Anna.
Thanks, Bob.